Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, welcome to the Must Hear Music Podcast. My name is Joe Lynch. I'm sitting here with Jason Lipschutz.
What's going on, man?
And Natalie Weiner.
Hey.
And before we get rolling here, I just want to say stick around after we talk about a couple songs. We have an interview with Austra, who stopped by. And yeah,
I didn't even
she's
know
great.
That.
They, yeah.
That's great.
So also, yeah, they have a new album, Austra. Future Politics.
It's so breaking that we don't even know.
And well, I had to keep it under wraps. It's a big secret. And front woman Katie Stelmanis stopped by, and we talked about both the music and the planet slowly dying. So
we
have some great times talking
that
about
does
that.
Sound uplifting.
Let's start with one of the, I guess probably the biggest song that came out recently, Katy Perry's "Chained to the Rhythm."
Yeah.
Which
I really honestly thought you were going to say Mariah because that's just where my head's at. Katy Perry, "Chained to the Rhythm," biggest song to come out recently.
I love it. I realize that's not much of a critical assessment, but like, it's so catchy. I've been listening to it like multiple times a day. It's so cool that the lyrics are, I should just say, I'll brag for you, Jason. So, the song came out and the song's lyrics kind of, are a little Trump era-y, like she's talking about, to extent everything seeming kind of like pointless and
living
in a bubble and facile in the face of kind of these greater world problems. So it's a pretty like lyrically complicated and dark pop song. Jason tweeted something that was like, this is Katy Perry just invented woke pop.
Yeah.
And Katy Perry herself tweeted at Jason and said, I'm calling it purpose pop.
Yeah.
And
I was like, Justin Bieber already dropped that album, Katie. But anyway.
Can I just tell you the next week of my life? I guess it hasn't been even a week yet, but I guess the next 4 or 5 days, it really has just like continued. Have been people tweeting at me like, I guess you've never heard of Born This Way. I guess you've never heard of Formation. Like, as if I literally had never heard of like a pop song that was political before.
Wait, have you heard of Born This Way?
What is that? I don't even know. No, but literally people were like, delete your account. I got a lot of that.
Oh my God.
It was great.
You won though. Katy Perry tweeted at you.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
I mean, come on, that's incredible.
Yeah, it was pretty fun.
Anyways, but the song itself, so what?
People, I will say just really quick, like, it was so funny that people texted me. That's such a funny thing to think about. Like, oh, Katy Perry tweeted at you.
I'm pretty sure I texted you.
Multiple people. They're like,
I was pretty excited.
Anyway.
Well, you know, I'll have you know, Maren Morris faved my tweet, so, you know, we're basically on the same level.
Yeah, let Jason have the spotlight for a second, Natalie, okay? Step in with your Maren Morris likes.
You have you have Styles P.
I feel
like you're the...
I love Styles P.
Styles
we're best
P. friends. Styles P. Twitter is dominated by you.
Yeah, no, so. You know, I'm his biggest fan. He's maybe my biggest fan. I like to think that, so... Yeah.
But okay, let's stop the bragging. Get back to "Chained to the Rhythm." What do you guys think of it as a single musically? What, are you guys into it?
I want to know what Natalie thinks. Actually,
I've already been pretty open about it. I think I'm into it. I'm with "Chained to the Rhythm" more than I ever expected to be with a Katy Perry song, except for like "Teenage Dream," which obviously I like because everybody likes that song.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I just think. It's a little bit of a surprise from her, just in the fact that it has a bit more heft than your typical Katy Perry single. I like the way that it's a little retro, but it feels fresh still. I think the production's really clean, but it does tap into kind of like a disco vibe or something.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, the lyrics are like sort of borderline. Like, I don't, she's not going to like win the Nobel Prize or whatever, but it's more substantive than,
yeah,
than I would think. And it is really catchy, which is the point of a Katy Perry song, I think. I'm worried, like, I mean, just hearing the rumblings from charts that it's maybe not, hasn't caught on with the same sort of speed as some of her earlier singles. Like, that makes me think maybe she's, like, veering towards a Lady Gaga route with Lady Gaga's last album.
Her art pop era.
I mean, yeah, I just think, like, sort of maybe being more thoughtful about your pop songs is not necessarily what resonates with audiences the most, because they like want to hear Closer by the Chainsmokers, you know? So I hope that she doesn't like suffer commercial consequences because she's taking it. I wouldn't say it's an artistic risk by any means, but it's certainly not mindless bubblegum stuff. So yeah, I hope she doesn't suffer commercial consequences, but we'll see. But I like the song.
Yeah, I really like the song too. I mean, I think it's, and I wrote something about it, which is that I think that this actually kind of gives her new era a purpose, in the sense mm-hmm. that, like, you know, she went kind of from Teenage Dream, which was very like candy colored and very like radio friendly pop, and then Prism was reportedly going to be a lot darker, and then they changed it, and mm-hmm. it's kind of all over the place, and it's still like a fine like pop album. It has good singles on it, but when you think about her next step, like, what is that going to look like? Is she going to revert back to, like, this is Teenage Dream again, or I'm gonna go full-on adult, but I don't know kind of how.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of like the fact that this, it seems like this album is going to be, you know, she's still gonna work with Max Martin and Sia and people like that to make these super catchy songs, but I like the fact that she's tailoring this era around, like, saying something and, like, defining herself in that way. And I think that, like, it's just hard. If you just look at the trajectory, I think it'd be very difficult for her to kind of stay at that forefront for so long in terms of, like, being the biggest star on radio. Mm-hmm. So I think that it was kind of inevitable to have, like, it doesn't really surprise me at all that Change of the Rhythm is not taking off as much as something like Roar. But, like, yeah, I think that she's kind of handling it the right way. I think this is a smart move, and I think it's a really good song. Yeah, I've heard it on radio a bunch already, and, like, I'm like, oh, all right, yeah, cool, I'm enjoying this, yeah.
I feel like that's, like, the benefit of a lot of Katy Perry songs, and this might be the same as, like, I mean, like, Dark Horse, which became her biggest song.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that wasn't an immediate smash. Yeah, like, Roar was an immediate, like, top five. Yep. Like, you know, it's a slow burn. It's good and it doesn't get old, is, yeah, I think, like, the benefit of, like, this song and a lot of her other songs.
The Max Martin touch.
Yeah, so I think there's a strong chance this will stick around and then, like, kind of slowly gain momentum. And, you know, Teenage Dream, that album, had the same thing. Like, that was not an out-of-the-gate success. It was a slower success.
Disagree, my friend, but, I mean, the first single was California Girls, which was massive.
But there were several months that went by without another, like, hit single from that. The album wasn't selling very well. But then eventually, like, it just kept producing slow rising hit singles and became like a blockbuster.
I don't know if I agree with that, but you know,
you're
what?
Have to fact check it.
Disagree with your disagree.
It had five straight number one singles.
No, I know. I'm saying it was a big hit, but it wasn't a big hit right away. Like, it wasn't like an out of the gate. Like, it undersold the first week.
Well, yeah. I mean, her albums are always gonna not sell as much because that's just the kind of artist she is. I mean, for some reason, like, she just doesn't have that Adele-esque, like, you need to buy the Katy Perry album.
I mean, I'd have to go back, but I feel like even a year after it came out, there were, like, think pieces, like, oh, why wasn't this a bigger hit? California Girls was a smash, then, like, it produced, like, three more number ones after that.
Well, then, yeah, eventually. But, like, I don't know, like, I think that Katy Perry is someone that, especially on the road, like, I think that she's going to tour behind this album, I'm assuming, and she does so well on the road. And she's actually, like, that's the thing that I'm most excited about. Like, having seen most of the big, like, pop stars, I think Katy Perry is, like, my favorite one to see
she's
live.
She's really,
like,
good
she's
live.
She's so good, yeah, live.
It's incredible.
So I'm excited for that. And I think that, like, no matter what happens in terms of this song, I think that it's, I think that she's given her fourth album a very nifty kind of narrative, and I appreciate that. And it's, you know, I wrote last week, like, it's also commendable. Like, she's actually trying to say something, which is not, like, the easiest thing to do. So,
yeah. I mean, she also has the, like, aging pop star thing, you know, possibly aging out of her demographic. Mm-hmm. So I think it's smart to sort of, like, if she wants to cement her legacy as somebody who's relevant for more than just, like, a 5-year period, like, she has to come through with something that's at least, like, critically acclaimed. Because I think, like, most of her peers, you know, Rihanna, Beyonce, Adele, Taylor Swift, whatever, like, they have albums that have resonated with people critically as well as commercially. And so Katy Perry, I don't know that she's necessarily had that same kind of thing. So.
No, that's a great point.
All right, well, you've heard it, I'm sure, but let's listen to a little bit of Chained to the Rhythm from Ms. Katy Perry. All right, that was Katy Perry, Chained to the Rhythm. Let's talk about the next diva we've got, Natalie's choice, Mariah Carey, I Don't, featuring YG.
Yes.
So I'm going to go on a limb and guess that you like this song.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like it was, like, specifically targeted at me. It's like a checklist of all the things that I like in a song. Mariah Carey, old school R&B sample, YG rap verse, produced by Jermaine Dupri. So it's like, and it's dope. It's what you would hope all of those things together would be. I mean, this is what she needs, because this is, like, her sweet spot. Like, R&B with a hip-hop, like, inflection.
Wait, what's the sample on it?
Donnell Jones. It's like, I know I forgot the name of the song. It's like Where We're From or something.
Okay.
It's just one of these things that was, like, big in 1997, and he never really had another song, I don't think. But, it's just kind of, like, that's what she does best, you know?
I think she sounds great. To my memory, like, this is the best, like, modern Mariah song, I think, since that Miguel collaboration, hashtag beautiful.
Oh, yeah, and maybe even, like, better, I think, than that, just as far as something that might, like, well, I just think, as far as something that might have a little bit more commercial appeal, I mean, it's sort of going back to, like, even, like, Shake It Off. You know, something that has that kind of same R&B,
like, very sexy
flavor to it. And it just, I think she's sort of accepting that maybe her voice can't do everything that it used to be able to do, and she wrote the song with that in mind.
We're going to have to edit that out of the podcast, or she's going to put a hit out on you,
Okay, she's not 20 anymore. You know, that's just fact of life. She still sounds great. She just was on Kimmel last night, and she performed the song, and she sounded great. And she had YG there, and it was lovely, and it gave me everything that I wanted, which is mentally hanging out with Mariah Carey and YG. I'm just, like, I'm happy for her. I hope that the song does well. I don't necessarily expect it to be a huge hit or anything, but I hope, you know, Mariah is still legit. She's still a legend. Like,
100%.
People need to put some respect on Mariah's name, and I hope that this song helps propel that.
What do you think, Jason?
I feel bad saying this.
Oh, wow.
I know. I know. I wasn't a fan. I'm sorry.
Not a fan.
I had high hopes. I love Mariah and YG. But I don't know. It just didn't work for me. I mean, I like how both of them sound together, but I just didn't. I thought, like, this kind of arrangement and, like, the chorus, it seemed a little forced to me, and I don't know. It didn't resonate with me. But, like, in the same way, I wasn't even thinking about this, but you brought up beautiful, or should I say hashtag beautiful.
Well, Joe brought it mm-hmm. up. He's a fan. But
I love that song.
But I think that, yeah. But yeah, and I think that that song is like, again, another collaboration, and it just seems much more natural. And I feel like this one was a, it, this one reminded me of that, the Triumphant, the song with Rick Ross and Meek Mill.
It's no, way no. better than that. Yeah, I mean, come
it's,
on.
It's better. It's better than that. But I think the reason why that one did not work was because it was kind of forced. It kind of was like,
I don't get that sense. You don't though. Get it. I mean, they were like in the yeah. studio together, and it was like. They wrote the yeah, song no. together.
Or at the very least, like Jermaine Dupri and Mariah, like it yeah, makes I it mean, seem like a real natural.
Yeah, no,
like,
it's there's definite chemistry here. I just feel like this particular arrangement doesn't really work for me. I'm sorry, guys.
I don't know. Well, I don't know.
You
know,
you can't please everyone.
Look, you guys do, and I don't.
That's fine. And that's fine. You know.
Oh my God, Jason. Just get out. Just leave.
Well, in Jason's defense, note, he is kind of bye. Sick. So yeah, excuse
yeah,
me.
Yeah, it's because I have a cold. That's why.
That's why he's making bad puns.
Yeah, that's exactly. What's your excuse like every day, Joe? Of just, making terrible puns.
That I'm an idiot. That's my excuse. No, you're not an no idiot. Physical excuse. All right, well, let's listen to it. Mariah Carey featuring YG, I Don't.
You just don't trust me. You don't trust me. You need to understand me. But you love me like when you
cause when you love someone, you just don't treat them bad. You mess up all we have. Probably think I'm coming back, but I don't. What's wrong? Thinking somehow I could trust you. See, I used to love you, but I don't.
All right, that's new Mariah. Let's talk about, what are the other ones? Oh, Jidenna, Bambi. So when, anyways, I am just like in love with this song. This is another Ooh. One that I'm just like listening to constantly. Like he's just so, he's so unique and weird, but like weird in the retro sense. Like the song, so anyways, so Bambi is kind of a, like sort of somewhere between like that period in like history where like doo-wop was fading out and rock was coming in, and there were these like kind of silky like R&B ballads on the radio in like the late 50s, like the Platters and the Spinners and stuff, and yeah. it sounds like the song really just sounds like it's from the late 50s. Like there's almost,
but like it's definitely, I think, an African like the yep. style of song is like African pop. Like that's, I think,
yeah,
there, I think there's a sample there, and I was looking online, I couldn't find what it was, but
it does, yeah, I can't tell what the sample is either, but it's just, it really sounds like this kind of like classic, but yeah, like also just sort of timeless sort of thing. It's just, he's so weird. Like when you think of like, so Classic Man was like his big breakthrough, and like this is like, to me it occupies the same universe, but it's like on the opposite end yeah, of the universe. Yeah, it's just, he's just so stylistically diverse. I was just so impressed with this. What did you guys think though?
Yeah, I loved it. I want to, first of all, do you guys know the Billboard connection to with this song and with Jidenna's album?
No.
So a lot of
wait, you wrote the song?
No. Yeah. No. Not that, like, not that far off. So a lot of the no, that obviously. A lot of the production from this album, and I believe this song, I haven't looked at the credits for this song, but a lot of, like, most of Jidenna's upcoming album was produced or co-produced by Andrew Horowitz, who is the brother of Stephen Horowitz.
Wow.
Former Billboard
amateur. That's crazy.
Shout out to Andrew Horowitz. Great guy, really good producer.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's but, cool. Yeah, so, I really like this song, and I just, like, I hope people don't sleep on Jidenna, man. Like, I feel like the whole Classic Man thing, like, kind of made him a meme, and like it was cool, but like he's so talented and mm-hmm. he's so good live. Like, I don't know if you guys have ever seen him live.
No.
So he's so good, and like,
yeah, he's a really good dancer. He's a good performer.
Yeah, and his songs are there, and like everything I've heard from this new album. What was the song with Quavo that came out? There was some, I'm blanking on the name, but that was really cool too. And this is kind of, yeah, like that, the kind of throwback vibe, that, like you said, the African pop vibe. And yeah, no, I just, he always kind of switches it up in a way that I really appreciate, that like hitting play on a new Jidenna song. I don't know what to expect. And I like that.
Yeah.
No, he's definitely like super creative. He has a nice voice. I don't know. It was funny. I was talking with Brian Josephs at Spin, one of our new colleagues, because we're part of the world's largest media brand now, in case you guys missed it. But anyway, we were talking about we were talking about this song, and he was like, it's Harry Belafonte Trap. And I was like, that's so
good. Yeah,
that's definitely exactly what it is. So shout out to him for coming up with the right description. But yeah, I mean, I have weird, like, personal angst with Jidenna because I interviewed him once and he was, like, kind of a prick. And I was just like, okay. But I do like the song and I think it's interesting, like, as far as with Drake sort of bringing WizKid onto the scene and, like, that sort of sphere of African pop and, like, you know, sort of hip hop, dance hall inflected stuff. Like, he's driving totally at the other end, like you're saying, which is a really unexpected way to bring in African influences into pop music. But I think it's just something we're going to see more and more because it's really on trend right now. I mean, if Drake is doing it, like, it's going to be a trend. So yeah, I think it's interesting. I like the song. He sounds good.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's listen to it. It's Jidenna Bambi.
From the jungle, I must be a lion. Or be a cheetah, but neither is fine. Don't wanna hurt my dear love of my life. Bambi, Bambi.
Ah, Bambi.
My dear, my dear, my dear.
Ah, Bambi.
My dear, I want you here.
Ah,
don't get too near, for there's lions, beware.
Alright, last and not least, we have a Jason pick.
Yeah!
I'm blanking on the name of the song. Muna.
End of Desire.
End of Desire. End of Desire. Yeah.
How did I remember that and you didn't?
Muna's a new group on RCA. They just released their debut album a couple weeks ago. You guys might have heard the song I Know a Place that has been like on the pop blogs.
You know how often I check pop blogs.
I don't think I've heard this song.
I mean, they've also played it. They were on.
Jason, do you have a pop blog outside of Billboard that you asked?
I wish.
Jason Lipschitz.blogspot.com.
I think I actually did have a blogspot. Anyway,
everybody, go find it.
Yeah, you can probably find it if you try. But anyway, yeah, I think that.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare tri-term medical plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
No, but they've played this song, like, they played I Know a Place on Kimmel, and I really like the whole album. I think it's, like, for fans of, like, Haim and that kind
That's
of, like...
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah, that kind of, like, 80s-inspired, like, synth-washed pop music. But this song is just kind of, like, buried in the track listing. It's track 10 of 12, and I think it's by far the standout. Like, I hit play on this, and, like, within 5 seconds of, like... Holy crap.
Crying.
Yeah, like crying, basically crying, yeah. Can I, quick segue, very quick, a song we have not talked about on here.
Surprise.
But I almost like teared up listening to today. The Sampha song, what is it called? The Nobody Knows Me Like My Mother's Piano. I was on the subway today, and I was, like, listening to that song, and I almost started crying. Anyway, shout out to Sampha.
Yeah, he's great. Yeah.
Anyway, back to Muna. But
back to Jason crying about songs.
Yeah, no, but I literally, that happened today. Anyway, I guess I am still a little sick. But yeah,
you're weak in this weak emotional state.
Thanks. But yeah, like, this album is, it's has some really great pop songwriting, and, there's nothing else I can really say about this song except that, like, it's just so... basically, the song End of Desire is about, like, the singer pleading to stop having these romantic feelings because they're driving her insane. And but it's done in such a dramatic way. Joe's like, I know all about that.
Oh yeah.
It's done in such a dramatic way and in such a like a such a gorgeous and kind of like lush arrangement that it just hits me every time. So what do you guys think?
I mean, I certainly don't have as many detailed thoughts on it as you, but yeah, I mean, I'm a sucker for stuff that is kind of that synth-based pop.
Yeah.
I like I guess, yeah, like there's kind of just like an overall like joy to the production or like this like ebullience to it that reminds me, it doesn't like sound like the Cranberries, but just how you listen to like Cranberry songs and even when there's, with the exception of Zombie, like there's just like this joyfulness like about the way the song is produced that I get with Muna. So I've only heard this one song and I'm curious to hear the
rest of
it. Check
out the whole album. The whole album's really good, but yeah, this song's my favorite. What do you think, Nat?
I mean, I liked it. Definitely, like, very Haim vibes. Yep. So, like, that's, like, it's just, like, them, but with synths, basically. Which is not bad, because obviously they make great pop songs. But, yeah, it's not, like, my personal thing that I would that's return fair. To many, many times. But I appreciate the well-constructedness of it.
Just wait for Muna featuring YG. Coming soon.
Boom. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That made me a little bit sad, but okay.
Cool.
All right. Well, let's listen to it. So, Muna, End of Reason.
Nope. End of Desire.
End of Desire. Wait, reason? What's End of Reason? Is that?
That's Trump's America.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm
anyways. All right. Muna, End of Desire. All right, that was Muna, and now let's go cut to my conversation with... let's cut to the phones. All right, this is my chat with Austra, so thank you for listening, and stick around to hear what she had to say, because it was very interesting. Hey, this is Joe on the Must Hear Music podcast. I'm sitting here with Katie from Austra. I didn't want to pronounce your last name because I knew I was going to mangle it. Stelmanis?
That's perfect.
Yes, you Katie Stelmanis from Austra. You are the front person of Austra. You guys have been... Your first album was what, 2011?
Yeah, 2011.
Okay, and you have your third one out now, Future Politics. I mean, I guess I wanted to start by, just before we dive into the album, you have such a like otherworldly, like incredible voice. I love it. Like, I love your music, but I've always just wondered, like, someone like a lot of people do music and like very few of them have those voices where you're like, this really stands out just by its own merit. Like, was there a point in your life where you realized like, wow, my voice is like special. It's like different than other people's singing voices.
I mean, I've been singing since I was like from my earliest memories as a kid. So it's always kind of been like something, like this kind of special thing that I've had, I guess. I remember being like 10 years old and like walking around the playground and my friends being like, sing for me. And I'd be like, okay. And we'd like go for a walk and I'd sing for them.
That's like every person's dream, by the way. Most people sing and their friends are like, can you please stop doing that?
Well, I would never sing for people like generally. So it was like a really big deal. They were like, I want to hear your voice. And I was like, fine. And then,
And then was there like an age where you were like, I like this and I want to like pursue it for real?
I mean, I guess I was just doing music stuff again, like since like my earliest memories as a kid in many different forms. Like I was, you know, performing in choirs. I was really into opera in high school.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, you can hear that in your voice.
Yeah. And so I thought I was going to do that for a while. And then I guess when I left high school, I changed my mind. I changed my career path.
What was the, let's talk about, I definitely want to swing back around to opera.
Yeah.
But so the new album, Future Politics, what does, I guess, the title mean?
Well, Future Politics is kind of more about like personal politics rather than politics in general. That's kind of what I was getting at. And so I guess like really what it's about is kind of changing the way people think, or at least sort of challenging people to change the way that they think. You know, really just about like breaking down paradigms and imagining different potentials for the future.
I mean, yeah, it's an interesting title. Is it kind of, I mean, this is just, I guess from a, you know, outsider perspective, this is a time where, you know, compared to 3 years ago, people are thinking way more politically than they mm-hmm. were, you know, 3-4 years ago. Is that coincidental that, you know, you have an album with politics in the title? Or, you know, are you like many people, you know, kind of like seeing, you know, this as a new different era? Or
I think it's a bit of both. I mean, I started writing these songs like 3 years ago when the landscape was really, really different. But I think that I was kind of writing about these problems that I saw, and those problems have just like culminated into something since I started writing the record. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think like if Donald Trump hadn't won the presidency, I think that the record would have a much different place in the world today. But seeing that it actually came out like the same day as Donald Trump, it's just positioned in a way that I never intended or imagined it would be positioned.
Yeah. And I mean, what do you think about that in general? Are you deathly afraid or?
Yeah. I mean, I was always like pretty afraid of Trump, but I mean, it's just kind of shocking, like what he's already done in his like first 3 days in office or something like that. You know, it's pretty hard to follow.
It is. It's overwhelming. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so the album, which I really enjoy, mm-hmm. I've loved all of your stuff. The one song that really stood out to me, was I Love You More Than You Love Yourself. Is mm-hmm. there like a story behind that one? That seems like it's just a very beautiful song title too.
Yeah. I mean, that song, I guess that song is a very personal song, and it's about loving somebody with depression. Mm-hmm. And I think like a lot of people have probably experienced this in their lives. It's just very difficult to kind of connect with people who are suffering from depression. And so that's, I guess that's kind of what that song is about.
Yeah. I mean, that is one of those, I mean, I don't want to like, you know, pry into like a personal thing, mm-hmm. but there is that element where it's like, you're with someone who's depressed, or maybe you are the depressed person mm-hmm. in a relationship, and it's like, you know, how much you quote unquote like put up with, and then at what point are you like, this is detrimental to myself?
Yeah, for sure. And there's always kind of that fine balance of like wanting to be supportive but also having to take care of yourself,
right? Mm-hmm. No, and I thought, I mean, just, you know, the song itself is a very sweet sentiment.
Yeah.
And like, you know, it's always a good thing to hear. Mm-hmm. Like I always, you know, whenever you're depressed, like it's trite, but like someone just saying that they like love you and appreciate you like makes a big difference.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess the rest of the songs, like where did they all come from? You know, are they all personal, or, you know, I mean, like what's the like genesis of the different ones?
I mean, I think a lot of the songs kind of have quite broad themes, or less about like sort of personal things in my life, but they still feel really personal because they're kind of like my reactions to things I was reading about or experiencing in the world. So it's like there's a song on the record called Gaia, which I wrote after, I don't remember what it was specifically, but like reading about some sort of like horrible environmental degradation thing. And it's like, I think that many people in our generation have real emotional responses to this information. You know, like the fact that the Great Barrier Reef might not exist in 50 years, that's like quite devastating. Yeah. And so I feel like I was writing music with those feelings, you know, and to me it's not that different than writing music about like a breakup or something, or just like about love in general, because it's still like feeling this deep sadness towards what's going on right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's two things. I mean, one, I think social media makes it a lot harder to ignore, you know, when you see pictures of like emaciated polar bears, you know, on one small piece of ice in a vast ocean, like that's heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, there's also the element where it's like, we're at that like midnight hour where it's like, you know, best case scenario, like you and I might not live to see it, but like for sure, if we have children, they're going to see it.
Yeah,
like
for sure.
The shit like really hit the fan.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I mean, I guess, like, just personally, when you, like, see that, I mean, how does that affect you? Is it, like, how do you deal with it? You know, is the just sadness? You know, is there any, like, proactive, you know, approach? Or, like, what's your take on it?
Well, I think when I was writing the record, it definitely came from a place of sadness and of hopelessness. But my way kind of out of that was researching and reading about the future and people's ideas for the future, so much so that I kind of became like obsessed with the subject, or anytime I'd read anything about like post-capitalism or some sort of like new crazy future invention or just anything that had to do with a future that was drastically different from what it seems like we're heading towards, I would just like want to read it and absorb it and just take it in. And, you know, that's kind of like what has really kept me afloat, is just sort of like imagining the potential of how different things could be.
Do you have any like recommended readings for people, or, you know, any like websites or particular topics you think are worth like looking up?
Yeah, I have a few. I mean, I read the first book that got me really into it was like the Naomi Klein book, This Changes Everything. Mm-hmm. That was what really started. And then the book that inspired like future politics specifically was this book called Inventing the Future, Inventing the Future, Post-Capitalism in a World Without Work. I think that's what it's called. And it's this book where basically like the whole thesis or whatever is that technology will save us because it will create like it will mean that we won't require labor anymore because mm-hmm. of automation, and it'll also mean that there won't be any scarcity because we'll have the ability to kind of like produce however much we want. And it's a really cool book, and it's like kind of obviously there's like flaws and everything, but there's something just like very subversive and like kind of punk about it.
Yeah.
And just like the way that they're writing like such a like drastically different idea of the future than what generally like people believe to be possible.
Yeah.
And then I read a bunch of like really good sci-fi too, but I could go down like a rabbit hole talking about this.
I love sci-fi. It's always, mm-hmm. I mean, I grew up on like Star Trek, like feeds my soul.
Yeah, me too.
But I have to say I'm more like, if I'm like thinking of it, I'm like, oh, it's going to be a Blade Runner future.
I know. Yeah, Star Trek was also really influential. There's like a book called Trekonomics that I haven't read, but I really want to read about like people talking about the viability of like actually Star Trek's world.
Yeah, I've never read that, but I've also heard about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's just such a like humanism, like philosophy thing. It's so great.
For sure.
But I wanted to circle back. So like opera, like personally, at what point was the decision to be like, nah, not really going to, cause you know, like opera is like a very clear career path. You have to like, study it. It's not as open-ended as like, mm-hmm. I'm going to do a band.
Yeah.
What was the impetus for that decision?
I mean, I think I just wasn't ready to commit to the lifestyle. I mean, by the time I got out of high school, and I had started to kind of like discover other types of music, and I just, yeah, it was really like when you're an opera singer, I mean, you can't do anything else. Like that's exactly it. Like your body is your instrument. You have to take care of your body. And I wasn't ready to do that when I was 18 years old.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, you know, just the album in general. So musically, like, you know, how do you see it like within the context of your other ones? Like, does it feel super different to you or?
Kind of, I guess. I feel like I wrote it in a more similar way to how I wrote the first record. Like I consider it to be much more of a bedroom project than Olympia was, which was a studio project. But I just have like a much larger arsenal, I suppose. Like I just know a lot more about making computer music than I did when I wrote the first record. And I guess also I had this intention with this record when I first started out writing it, that I wanted to make background music. That I wanted mm-hmm. to make music that you could just like put on and it would like color a room, but people wouldn't really notice it. And
a little more Eno-y.
Yeah. And I started writing a lot of songs like that. And then I realized that like my career would probably be over because I'm like, you know, we're a live touring band.
Right.
So I can't perform background music. So I kind of like changed direction, but there's a lot more like sort of like ambient and relaxed and chill moments on this record than there are on the other ones.
Yeah. You could always side project it though, too. Yeah,
totally side project that.
And then, you know, like mysterious ambient identity open for yourself when Oster's on tour and like no one knows it's actually you.
Yeah, I guess so. Twice. I guess that's what Caroline Polachek does from Chairlift. She always puts out these like ambient electronic albums on the side.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, I guess just, and what's on the plate for 2017?
Just like constant touring, I guess.
And do you like touring or?
Yeah, I love touring. I'm definitely pretty addicted to touring. We just started like our big world tour, I guess. And I'm only about a week in and I definitely feel pretty rusty in terms of touring life. Like I'm kind of like, mm-hmm. oh my God, how am I going to do this? But I know that like once you get into it, then you just get into it.
So a lot of people, I love touring, like you said, they're addicted to it. Mm-hmm. A lot of people get exhausted pretty easily. So you have a good like balance between like enjoying life on the road, but also like keeping yourself healthy. And
yeah. Well, I think that like I've in the past really gone for it on tour and then hit like a breaking point of exhaustion. So I'm trying to avoid that. I'm trying mm-hmm. to like go into it knowing that it's going to come and trying to avoid it by like, you know, being really militant about making sure I get enough sleep wherever possible.
Right.
And yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, thank you for stopping by. The album is Future Politics from Austra. We'll play a little bit of it now. And then by the time this posts there, you are in real time as we're talking, you are mm-hmm. about to go perform in Billboard. But in internet time, while you're listening to this, that performance will already be live on Billboard's Facebook page. So go cool. check that out. But Katie, thank you so much for stopping by.
No problem. Thank you.
I love your music. I love the new album. So really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay. Thanks. Mm-hmm.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.